everybody, it's Dr. Amy Myers, and I want to welcome you to another episode of the Myers Way podcast. Today, I am super excited to have our guest, Pilar Gerasimo, and she was recently the founding editor of Experience Life magazine, which has over 3.2 million readers. She has also been the vice president of education for Lifetime Fitness and one of the first and the first female executive for them. She started a website, revolutionaryact.com. She's done a manifesto for thriving in a mixed-up world. I mean, the accomplishments of this woman, the list keeps going on and on. She recently created an app that has over 100,000 downloads. She was briefly the editor of the Huffington Post Healthy Living section. She's also been on Dr. Oz's Oprah and Friends and the Mayo Clinic TV, and she's about to write a book. So I really cannot wait to talk to Pilar and hear all about each one of these amazing experiences that she has, you know, had a part of. Welcome, Pilar.
Oh, thank you so much, Amy. Or should I call you Dr. Amy? No. I think of you as Amy, but I which I really prefer.
Amy is great.
Oh, thank you so much for that nice introduction, rather. And yeah, I mean, I think I love the way you said it, that things that I had a part of, because one of the things I'm most proud of is the people that I've done all of this with. And the magazine is something, Experience Life magazine, which I launched in partnership with Lifetime Fitness 12 years ago now in 2001, has been an incredible project that's involved literally dozens of really talented people. And the same is true of the site revolutionaryact.com, which is our sister site. Incredibly talented team have helped to create that, as well as the app, 101 Revolutionary Ways to Be Healthy. I like to think of myself as sort of the initiating creative force behind all of those projects, and having authored the manifesto and authored the text behind the 101 Ways. But I would be remiss if I didn't give credit where credit's due to a whole lot of really talented people who did a lot on the technology and design side and made those things as incredibly powerful tools as they are. So big kudos to Lifetime Fitness and the Experience Life and Revolutionary Act teams as well.
Awesome. Well, I'm sure they appreciate your, you know, giving a shout out to them. And, you know, it takes a village, as we all know, to get healthy and to be healthy and to have our businesses and our practices. I mean, I'm super thankful for the people that are around me supporting me as well. So big shout out to everybody that supported us in our lives.
Amen. Yeah.
Yeah. So speaking of, you know, I find that most people that are in this world that we're in of really trying to, you know, provide a healthy life for ourselves, those around us, and really trying to make big impact in the world, typically, and I don't know if this is true of you, but typically have a personal story themselves of potentially a health issue or crisis maybe that they went through that made them realize, you know, this isn't the way that it has to be. I don't know if that is true with you, but if it is, you know, do you have a story and would you be willing to share that with us?
Oh, yes. And yes, absolutely. I think that's a great story. It's a great question. And I think it's so true that most of the people that are passionate about this become passionate because they've had a personal experience. Mine, I kind of call it my riches to rags to riches story, because I started out as a really in a very healthy environment. I grew up primarily on a communal organic farm in Wisconsin. My mom and her best friend decided that they wanted to raise their kids in this really healthy environment. So we, you know, we grew our own food and we spent all of our time outdoors doing active projects and creative projects. And we did not have a television. Virtually everything we ate was a whole food and organic. And we were encouraged to, you know, pursue our interests in creative play and things. There were no video games back in those days and no social media, no screen time. So I grew up in this world and sort of took it for granted. But I also thought it was very weird, you know, and you know that age that kids get to where they suddenly start questioning, like, why are my parents this way? And why do I live in this odd, organic, natural, homemade bread kind of world when all my friends are eating packaged foods and watching television? And I kind of got to this point where I just began rejecting what my mom and the farm folk were doing. And I just, more than anything, wanted to live a quote unquote normal life. So I began, I think, at about 13 or 14, sort of feeling like I wanted to be normal, and eventually went away to college. And that was really the beginning of a lot of my significant health challenges. I think in my late teens, I was already experiencing some of the pressures I think a lot of women feel, young women feel, as their bodies are changing, and things like, I should be thinner, By that time, my mom and dad were divorced. My dad had begun seeing a woman who I believe was an anorexic, but I did not know that at the time. But I suddenly started having all of these really weird issues with my body, and at the same time feeling like I was getting, you know, I should be eating diet food and low calorie food. But then I would also get cravings for fast foods, and I would get depressed when I would eat those things. And I would started to develop really unhealthy behaviors even before I went away to college. But when I went away to college, it was like the first time in my life I had total control over what I ate and did. And unfortunately, I just sort of went all the way the wrong direction. And plus, I was stressed out. You know how you go to school and suddenly it's tests and pressure. And I was a worrywart as a kid. And I think that college was sort of the climax of that for me. And my experience as a young adult was of becoming less and less healthy. The further I went into normal choices and followed normal advice, the less healthy and happy I became. And eventually, I just got so frustrated with it that I'd embarked on my own healthy journey. You know, I just decided I don't want to live this way. And I had to figure it out largely by myself. I knew I didn't want to just go back and go live on an organic farm necessarily. Although ironically, now at the age of 46, that's exactly where I am. I moved back to the farm, although it's a very different place now than it was in the 70s. But in the process of figuring it out for myself and understanding, you know, my mom actually had a lot of it very right, that eating whole foods and natural foods and, you know, clean, organic, local foods is a really important element of being healthy, being active, pursuing projects that are meaningful for you, being surrounded by healthy community. All of those things I discovered really did work. I just had to find a way to make them work for me. And eventually I did, but in the process, I just was really horrified that the best information and the best approaches that I figured out for myself, I wasn't finding in the conventional health and fitness media. I kept buying magazines, for example, with, you know, sexy bikini ladies on the cover, and finding that instead of them having great advice that helped me get healthier, they tended to make me feel worse about myself. And the counsel in them was often really poor. And many of the things that did work simply weren't covered by those conventional media outlets. So that was something that I decided I really wanted to set out to fix.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, we're products of the, you know, the 80s when the snack wells came out and the lean cuisines and, yeah, you know, all that. Like I grew up, my parents as well, we didn't have a farm, but, you know, just organic food. They were sort of hippies and, you know, whole wheat, homemade bread and yogurt and brown rice. I mean, I never saw sugar as a kid. And then, you know, the 80s came around, and just what you're saying, you know, teenager in college and, you know, reading these magazines and seeing these skinny women and telling you, oh, eat the snack well, it's only 100 calories, or eat the lean cuisine. And, you know, I totally fell prey to all of that stuff. And you're right, you know, none of it worked. I mean, in fact, it was all chemicals and full of sugar and, you know, wheat and all the stuff that now is causing all kinds of problems for us. So it's totally great that you're back at your roots.
Yeah, it was a long winding path, you know, and it's interesting. I think one of the things that I realized is, you know, each of us has to find our own way, our own path. And depending on what your, you know, ethics and aesthetics and preferences are, your natural predilections and preferences, that there really is no one way, but there are kind of common themes, I think, in the lives of people who are sustainably living healthy lives, people who are feeling good on an ongoing basis, and many of whom feel better over time instead of worse. When you look at what the common elements of their lives are, they may not follow exactly the same diet or the same exercise program. But there are some philosophical similarities and some practical similarities and themes that I see over and over again. And I think, for example, you know, whole natural foods, for the most part, are the thing I see as being incredibly common. Like, you might choose different ones, but right, generally speaking, the snack wells and the lean cuisines are not the path that I see working sustainably for most people. And that's a big aha that takes a while to figure out. If you believe everything you read, you know, everything has to be in 100 calorie snack packs. And it has not been my experience that that is true.
Right. And so when you started the magazine, when you approached them about starting this magazine, you're really going against the grain. All the magazines out there really were about these quick fixes and how to get in the bikini. So, you know, I hear from your story, that's how you kind of came up with the idea of the magazine. And what resistance or not resistance were you met with the magazine? Amy, hold on 1 second. I'm going to answer that question, but I'm going to have you pause because I have to let my dog in because she's going to bark. Otherwise, 1 sec. Yes, you can come in. Come on in. Quit barking. Come on. That's her strategy for getting in, to stand at the door and bark.
Yeah.
Okay, can you ask that question again? Because I want to answer it directly.
Sure. I'll wait till you're set over there.
I'm set.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, so it sounds like, you know, the story that you just told us was kind of the precipitous to your wanting to start the magazine. I mean, the magazine sounds like it really was going against the grain at the time that you were starting it. Most, it sounds like, of all magazines out there were really about the quick fix, the bikini body, the, you know, low fat, this, that, and the other. So were you met with any resistance when you started the magazine? And just tell us about your path with the magazine.
Sure. Wow. You know, it was one of the most amazing experiences of my life in terms of synchronicities. As I was thinking about the fact that this magazine ought to, this sure ought to exist. You know how you do that? Like, I wish someone would start a magazine like this. I was working as an editor of a magazine for the American Society of Interior Designers. I had a kind of a winding beginning of my career path, originally thinking I was going to be an academic. My dad was a professor. And I thought I would do that. And eventually I figured I didn't really want to be a professor. I got into marketing, communications, and custom publishing. Eventually, I started my own little consulting company. And I was working on a project of a different magazine. But I realized I actually liked working on magazines, and I thought I could maybe do this as a fun project. And I started writing up this proposal for this progressive health and fitness magazine. And as I showed it to people, I got two responses, and they were both very interesting. One was, oh my God, I want to read that magazine. That's the magazine I want. And I got that from a lot of my friends and colleagues. From people within the publications industry, people who were inside a magazine, big magazine companies and things, or who had been refugees from them, said, oh, it's a great idea, but you're going to run into problems because that's not the kind of magazine that most advertisers want to be in. You know, think about it. Most of the big magazine contracts come from processed food companies and from pharmaceutical companies. And, you know, they want articles about their stuff. They want what they call supportive editorial. And I read this essay by Gloria Steinem. She has a book called Moving Beyond Words, I think. And in that book, there's an essay called Sex, Lies, and Advertising, where Gloria Steinem describes her experience of starting Ms. Magazine back in the day. I think it was late 60s, maybe. And how much struggle they had getting advertisers to support the magazine because they weren't doing articles on lipstick and pantyhose and, you know, how to dress to catch a man. They were doing these very meaty articles about the women's movement and about issues that were actually important. And they were doing, you know, think about poetry and articles about abuse and things that nobody in the advertising industry wanted to touch with a 10-foot pole. And I think because I'd read that essay, it sparked a kind of revolutionary spirit in me where I was like, you know what? I get that it maybe isn't going to be a runaway hit with advertisers, but I think enough readers are going to want to read this that it may be able to get supported by a subscription-based model. Well, at the same time, very weirdly, the company that became the publishing partner and really the owner for Experience Life, Lifetime Fitness, was just embarking on a search for a new creative team for a magazine that they had started. Someone had presented it. It had gotten maybe two or three different issues out, but it was not a very good magazine. It wasn't really a magazine at all. It was sort of a glorified newsletter, and it had things like aerobic schedules in it. And it, you know, there's not a lot of content there. So I got approached through a friend of a friend who said, look, they have this magazine. They're looking for something different. And why don't you pitch your idea? I did. I pitched this completely nutty idea to the executive team at Lifetime Fitness. And I, for whatever reason, the timing was right. I think the CEO, Brahma Karati, who had founded the company, recognized that he really wanted to support healthy people in making sustainable, healthy way of life change. And he saw the magazine as being an educational vehicle and support system for that in a way that made them worth, it made it worth underwriting. So we got together and figured it out. And eventually we did four issues, I think the first year, six the second. And by then, he was all in. The company began realizing it was connecting with readers, and we started on a 10-issue schedule. From there, it just grew. And I think a lot of the people who doubted that it could work became convinced that it could, because the response it got from readers, Amy, was amazing. And to this day, I still love reading the letters to the editor section, because it's not just that people say, gee, I love the magazine. They say, this magazine, this article changed the way I thought about something. It changed the way I act and the way I feel about myself and my family. And it's making a difference in my life. And thank you for being different. And I think that has just made it worth all of the hard work that doing a magazine is. But yeah, at the beginning, you know, it really was a hard, it was a stretch for people to imagine that it could work.
Yeah. I mean, I just, as you were saying that, I literally, every hair on my body is standing up and I have goosebumps everywhere. It is so amazing to affect people's lives in such a powerful way, and people around the world that you just don't even know. I mean, I have that same experience on my Facebook page. You know, I mean, the idea of, oh, it's a community. And you think, well, no, it's not really a community. I mean, it's this online thing. You don't know any of these people. But it is so powerful to get those emails or those, you know, post on Facebook. And I can only imagine the people reaching out and emailing you from your magazine saying, you know, this, I get the same thing. You know, this article changed my life. I know that there's hope. I know that there's help. I know that there is another way of thinking about health, which I think is how you and I really connect, which is one of our missions, is just to educate people to know that it doesn't have to be this way. I mean, it doesn't have to be this other way, but there are a lot of different ways it could be. And let's give you the information and let you pick the way that you want it to be for you, and to know that there are other choices.
I appreciate your work so much and the whole approach of functional medicine so much, which I know is the type of medicine you practice. And it's, I wish there were hundreds and thousands more doctors like you doing it that way. But I think there isn't a natural emphasis within that approach on empowering individuals and communities to take care of themselves in a way that produces substantially different results than the conventional so-called diet and exercise approach, which they keep getting hit with when they go to the doctor. You know, well, you should reduce your calories and, you know, go on this diet and begin becoming more active. You know, it's like this vague sort of thing.
Right.
And lo and behold, it's like they're still eating foods that they're intolerant to. So they feel awful and they don't have any energy or vitality that makes them want to be active, for example, or they reduce their calories, but they don't improve the quality of their nutrition. And so their vitality doesn't improve and their metabolism doesn't improve. And it's so hard to get decent quality, scientifically supported and clinically supported advice from the conventional system that, unfortunately, I think a lot of people end up feeling very disempowered. And they read the pamphlet or they read the conventional magazine article or they go online and read something that the conventional medical association is suggesting. And it often actually ends up setting them back and confuses them so badly that they end up just throwing it all away and going, well, forget it. I might as well just eat, you know, cheeseburgers and sit on the couch with my remote control because nothing I'm doing is working anyway. And then they just, you know, end up reliant on pharmaceuticals that are really in the long term not going to improve their health at all, and often will end up undermining it even more. So that's kind of the vicious cycle. And to be part of a system that is actually uplifting and expanding people's sense of possibility, I don't think that there's anything more satisfying in the world. And, you know, in terms of a profession, there's a great line actually in one of Sean Colvin's songs where she says, you know, may we all be engaged in professions that heal or something like that. And I just think that's what I want to do. I'm signing up for that.
Yeah. No, I mean, again, I have goosebumps everywhere. It's so true. I mean, I can't, you know, it's just, I mean, I think many of our listeners probably already know my dog passed away this week, and she was my best friend for nearly 14 years and got me through. I literally got her the day I got in med school. So she saw me through med school and residency and ER work and then into my practice. And I really think that she felt like her mission was done, that I was on my path. I'm doing, you know, what I had set out to do 14 years ago, and it's flourishing and it's thriving. And she said, you know, you're on your own now. You can do it. And I was just posting on Facebook Facebook, you know, you and I, it was a little touch and go today whether I was going to feel up to doing this. And it really gives me the motivation to go on knowing how much I love what I do and how much it affects people. And so I couldn't imagine, you know, doing anything else. I couldn't imagine, you know, having that loss and having to get up to go, you know, I don't know, to just some regular 9-to-5 job that I had no passion for and I wasn't, you know, impacting the world or people's lives in some kind of way. So it's we're glad to have you in the club, in the tribe.
Oh, it's such a great tribe. It's such a great club. And I think, you know, that's something that's often overlooked in health is the power of inspiration and support and motivation from people, from real people, you know, whether it's online or in your neighborhood or your own household, or, you know, our children, our pets, our lovers, our friends, the relatives we care about that motivate us to keep helping them and ourselves. Those kinds of internal motivations, you know, behavioral science tells us that those are the ones that are the most lasting. That looking at the picture of a bikini clad and very photoshopped, retouched supermodel on the cover of a magazine may initially give you this feeling of like, oh, I'm going to change. I want to be just like that. And you embark on a diet for, you know, 3 hours until you get really hungry and low blood sugar and then go completely crazy. You just start feeling so bad about yourself that you decide, forget it, I might as well just go to the movies and need a huge thing of like trans fat laden popcorn. But when you start changing your life because of who you want to be or how you want the world to be or what you want to be supportive of, I mean, so many people I know have changed the way that they eat less because they wanted to lose weight or look like a particular body shape than because they realized they didn't want to support a food system that was counter to what their values and what they believe they want for the world or how they felt about the environment or about animals, for example. Other people who were unable to change their lives and their bodies until they had a very significant crisis in their life, like a parent dying of a chronic disease that they knew that they were at risk of, or seeing a child come into the world and realizing that they wanted to be more present as a parent, or changing jobs and suddenly finding, you know, they had more motivation and reason to show up for something that they really cared about. And they naturally just got healthier without even consciously changing their everyday behaviors. So that's some of the magic, I think, of healthy way of life change and ongoing inspiration and support, what they call intrinsic values and intrinsic motivations that make a huge difference in how we approach and sustain our efforts in that area.
And I love asking this question to people because the answer can be so varied. What does being healthy mean to you?
To me, healthiness has to do with this feeling of expansion and possibility. Healthy people, it's a sense of openness and like life is growing. We're growing. Things are getting better and more interesting. Everything's a possibility. And I contrast that with a feeling of low vitality where it's almost like the world is contracting or shrinking around you, or there's like a darkness and a heaviness in the way that you feel. This can, for me, on a day-to-day basis, be a really great barometer for how I can notice what I'm doing to myself. When I feel like I have full vitality and lots of energy and attention and focus and enthusiasm for my life, I know whatever it is I'm doing is good stuff. Most of the time, when I'm not doing the things that I know work for me, like drinking enough water and eating enough healthy food, eating regularly enough, getting enough sleep, engaging in activities that make me happy, getting outdoors, little by little, even though I consider myself to be a really healthy person, I begin to feel that I'm not quite as outward. My energy is shrinking. My sense of hope gets a little bit smaller. I become more reactive. And it's almost like I'm just pulling into myself a little bit. And I don't feel as much like life is magical and full of possibility. It's like, life is a little bit of a slog today. And whenever that happens, I'm in the habit of saying like, okay, what am I not doing? You know, sometimes it's things like I'm not connecting enough with people I love. I'm working too much and I'm stuck in front of my computer and it's making me feel
less, you know, and I need to change those patterns. And lo and behold, that sense of expansion and possibility and hope comes back to me, and my physical energy and vitality come back to me, and my metabolism comes back to me. And that's always really nice too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really great, great answer. What do you think are some challenges facing people who are, you know, genuinely trying to get healthy?
I think one of them we touched on, which is the state of information that's available to them through health and fitness media, and increasingly social media, where I think a lot of people are getting their daily counsel. On the one hand, you know, Twitter and Facebook and Pinterest are great resources for kind of a constant flow of fresh ideas and insights and ways of keeping up with thought leaders whom you admire, or running across unexpected content that you might not get at otherwise. You know, I've seen a bunch of amazing stuff like weekly workouts and things that we used to have to really work hard to go in search of, and now they come to us, which is great. Unfortunately, in that same stream comes a gob of horrible misinformation and really confusing stuff. And I think it's disheartening for people who are just starting and embarking on a healthy way of life journey to get hit with it all and feel like there's just too much here. There's no way I can make sense of it. I'm overwhelmed. It's going to be too hard. I don't know whom to trust. So I think finding a few resources that you do feel that you can trust, and experimenting, having an open enough mind to say, all right, you know what? I'm going to try this for a week or for 2 weeks or even for a day and see how I feel about myself, about my body, what happens to my energy. Mm-hmm. Keeping it simple initially, I think, is really important. One of the reasons that we, the magazine, I think, has done so well is we've provided a lot of different gateways within the magazine for people. There's nutrition and general wellness counsel if you want to change your diet and the way that you're eating. There's advice on how to cook differently, shop differently, eat differently. But the focus is always on whole foods. And there's lots of flexibility within that. But the basic message is eat real, whole, natural foods. Eat it as organic or local or clean and healthy and sustainable as you can. Lots of choices there, but maybe food isn't where people can start. Maybe somebody is more engaged about fitness and activity. And there, again, we have lots of different ways that people can do that. There are workouts that we recommend. There are success stories of people who have become more active. Lots of different examples of ways to do that. And then we also will cover things like adventures, outdoor experiences that people can have, you know, whether they're trips to the wilderness or meditation retreats that just take people outdoors and put them in different environments and get them moving under their own steam. But there's a whole third category of content. If diet and exercise or nutrition and activity aren't your thing, about a third of the magazine Experience Life is focused on what we call quality of life. And that stuff, everything from stress management, relationships, money, media, environment, all of the different parts of our lives that impact our health and fitness, but we tend to overlook. And for some people, it really is not a bad place to start. If they don't feel up to actively shifting the way they're eating or moving their bodies, they may be open to shifting the way they think or becoming more aware of the triggers that tend to make them make less healthy choices, or to build the skill sets that allow them to change their daily behaviors. Things like, we had a really fun series called Order Out of Chaos, which encouraged people to start in their spaces and look at how their physical, their homes, their offices, the places that they were spending time every day affected their self-perception and their sense of well-being, and maybe influenced the way that they were treating their bodies and their body minds. And so I think there are simple interventions that don't require enormous amounts of scientific, you know, proof to show that they work. You can just experiment with them and see what happens. And I believe that meeting people where they are and letting them choose their path forward based on what they feel ready for is a really lovely way to encourage people without judging, without bossing, without preaching, because I do think everybody has a different path and can do it a different way. But if you get too complicated and prescribe really intensive, you know, protocols for people before they're ready, before they are able to articulate their preferences or notice what's working or not working for them, I think that's when we end up driving people away from a better way of living rather than encouraging them, which I know is always a goal.
Yeah, and what I'm hearing from what you're saying is really, you know, it boils down to listening to yourself and knowing what's the right thing for you. And I think that's one of the things that we do in functional medicine as well, is teach people how to listen. And, you know, it can be a really hard thing to do. I know for me, you know, surrounding Bella this week, I when things started going down, I just texted my office and said, cancel everything for the week, because I knew either I was going to be dealing with a very sick dog or I was going to be sort of trying to, you know, recover from having my dog pass, which she ultimately did. And it's really been this minute-to-minute thing. And one of my friends who was in the Peace Corps with me said, oh, my God, what are you going to do for the rest of the week? You know, why don't you come up and visit me? I'm in Martha's Vineyard. Come up for the weekend. And I said, well, actually, you know, I'm actually enjoying this minute to minute. I've never had it. You know, I mean, my mother passed away nearly 13 years ago, and I went straight into med school, then residency and whatever. And it's like, well, honestly, this is the first time in my life that I actually got to have the choice, because I didn't work for somebody else and I wasn't in residency and I wasn't doing all this stuff. I actually had to have, you know, got to make the choice to listen to myself. And it's been a hard thing for me. And, you know, being a doer, just like you, you know, wanting to save the world and, you know, having a passion for what I do, to really slow down and listen to me and what I need for the next couple of days. And everybody deals with that, you know, differently, as in health or grief or, you know, whatever, all of the things that you were kind of mentioning. But really, that has been one of the biggest lessons for me over the years. And I don't think I was always good at listening to me and knowing what was right for me. And so it sounds like that's a lot of what the writing in Experience Life magazine was doing, was really supporting people and listening to them and what, you know, what was the right thing for them, a food, a exercise, a breathing technique, you know, whatnot.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think allowing people to experiment and see for themselves what works. You know, I loved, you've done some wonderful pieces on gluten intolerance, for example. And I've heard so many people say, well, you know, what's the test I can get from my doctor? And, you know, there's a lot of debate about, you know, whether people who have not yet been diagnosed as gluten intolerant should or should not get off gluten. And I've always counseled people, like, you know, change your diet around and see if you feel better. And it sounds incredibly simple, but it's like, you know, it's like that old joke, hey, doctor, it hurts when I do this. Don't do that.
Right.
It's like, you know, with all due respect to the medical profession and its desire to clinically test a thing for all kinds of things, and that's off. There's huge value in that. I'm a big fan of the lab test. I've had a lot of them done myself, and they are really insight provoking. But a lot of people I know have had enormous success improving their health by simply tinkering and experimenting and saying, you know, when I eat this way, I feel better. I'm going to keep eating this way. When I feel that, when I start eating this way, I feel worse. My energy got better when I went off of sugar. And as long as I don't eat a lot of sugar, I tend to continue to feel better. Occasionally, I'll eat a bunch of it. God only knows why. I maybe need to be reminded that it doesn't do great things for me. And it's like my body will tell me. And everybody's different. You know, it's like, I am a gluten intolerant person. I've been off of gluten for 25 years. And let me tell you, the first 10 years were a lot harder than the last 10.
Getting
a lot easier to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, I still am amazed at how often people get in arguments over the diagnosis of celiac or gluten intolerant and gluten sensitive, the same thing with dairy, and get all just caught up getting, like, people yelling at each other about this stuff, rather than just respecting that there's a lot of different ways for people to eat. And it's really important for you to figure out for your body what works in the long haul. Same thing with exercise, you know. Yoga and hiking and weight training and body weight stuff works really well for me. For other people, very different protocols. You know, some people love CrossFit, some people hate it. Some people think that jumping rope is a great time. Other people think it's deadly boring. Same thing with running. It's all fine. It's all good with me. But if you don't experiment, you'll never know. And I think trying things once or twice is always worth a shot.
I'm just over here smiling ear to ear about the whole gluten intolerance, you know, testing or giving up versus testing or just trying it. Because every time I write an article, I say the best test you can do is testing it on yourself. Take it out, see how you feel, add it back in, see how you feel. Like, that is the best test out there. And inevitably, I get a whole slew of people, you know, writing in the comment sections, don't do that. Go get tested first. If you stop eating it, then your test will be negative. And, you know, this whole thing. So, you know, I recently wrote an article that I hope will be published by the Huffington Post. And so in that article, I was like, okay, I always get comments, you know, about this in the comment section. Here is my thought about it, you know, because, just as you said, people are just get in an uproar like, no, don't do that. You've got to go to the doctor and get the test because somehow, like, if you eat it and you feel terrible and you take it out and you feel awesome, but the test is negative, like, somehow that means that your body is wrong and the test is right and you can keep eating it. So
yeah, it's. I just had a friend telling me, she was nearly in tears about this. She went off gluten. She felt enormously better. A whole bunch of stuff changed for her. And then her doctor suggested that she put it back in her diet so that she could get the test and her antibodies would show up or whatever it was. And she was just like, I can't imagine going back and doing that. She's like, I've come so far. And, again, it's not to diss someone who is really motivated to do that. Like, if that's what you want to do, God bless you. That's fine. I mean, I have no problem if somebody feels motivated. But to feel that much anxiety and know from your own experience that you're going to feel like hell and your skin is going to go to hell and your gut is going to be miserable and everything is going to be difficult for you and painful and you're just in the process of healing your body, but your doctor's telling you you've got to do it this way. That to me is just a disempowering place to be. And I always counsel people, what you don't want to do is end up feeling that you are doing your own self, your body, mind violence of any kind. And I think so often, unfortunately, that's the kind of culture of health and fitness media and medical media in many cases is one where you're disconnected from your own experience and someone from the outside comes in and tells you what to do. One of the things that's interesting, Experience Life magazine, at least under my watch as editor in chief for 12 years, we almost put a full moratorium on the word should. We simply tried very hard not to use it. Yeah. It just didn't have any value. I would much rather say, here are a few possibilities to consider, or you might find this worthwhile.
Yeah.
I think it's great. And I think increasingly we're finding outliers and revolutionaries and, experimenters of all kinds who are getting into this game and being willing to encourage people to pursue paths that, maybe a little bit outside of the established convention. But they, in many cases, really are supported by quite good science and a ton of clinical data. And anecdotally, hey, if it works for you, that's enough for me.
Yeah, I'm hoping one day that add it back in just so your test will be positive will be considered malpractice. If somebody comes to you with XYZ symptoms that resolved by getting off of it, it's documented in your note. I tell people all the time, I think someday that will be malpractice asking you to add it back in just to have a positive test. But we're far from that place right now. So, but maybe someday. Speaking of little ways to begin starting to get healthy, I have found that your app, 101 Revolutionary Ways to Be Healthy, is a great way to start. It's kind of like a little daily mantra or something. And then if you want more information, what I love about it is you can kind of click and then it takes you to an article all really about whatever the topic was that, your 101 ways that showed up that day. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about that app and sort of your precipitous to create it?
Yes, absolutely. Well, it's interesting. A few years ago, I had been doing the magazine for almost a decade, and I started realizing I had assembled a kind of collection of thoughts in my own mind that I hadn't yet really articulated. And I wrote a feature called Being Healthy is a Revolutionary Act. And it was about the kind of wisdom I found necessary to be a healthy person in an unhealthy world. The feature and ended up including a manifesto that I wrote called A Manifesto for Thriving in a Mixed Up World, which is about 10, I call them 10 truths, self-evident truths about what it takes to be healthy. And out of that 10-point manifesto, I got some feedback from some readers that are like, okay, this is great, but I need more practical. Like, how do you break this down into things that I can do every day? And I was like, well, okay. And I sat down at a table and just wrote a whole bunch of ways. And it ended up being about 100 of them. And the 101st is about sharing the first 100. But I found that the process of thinking through, giving people snack-sized interventions, things that they could change on a daily basis about their thinking, about their behavior. For me, it was really energizing to put together. And it was the feedback I had was almost immediate. Like, this is really cool and fun.
after we'd written up the 101 ways, we turned them into a poster. And out of the poster, it's like, wow, this could be a really cool app. And then we turned it initially into a web, an interactive web infographic. And people can find that at revolutionaryact.com. It's sort of a taste test for the blog or for the app itself. But it was really fun. And like you could mouse over each of the 101 ways and it would flip over and kind of translate what that little thing was. For example, like number 88 is give your best gifts. And if you click on that, you can find out kind of what that means. And again, these are sort of all different body mind things. But so 88, give your best gifts. The copy that goes along with it says developing and sharing them endows you with the enthusiasm and energy. Neglecting or squandering your gifts can slowly kill you. So that's about enthusiasm and living. Other ones that are about eating more plants or, you know, getting a buddy to exercise with or, you know, focusing on the action, not the outcomes. Each of these things would translate getting past body envy, which is one of my favorites. Number 59, getting past body envy, says release supermodel and celebrity obsessions. Translate your desire for a fitter, more beautiful body into positive, self-respecting daily action that nourishes you and makes you stronger. The cool thing, so this is the interactive infographic that's available at revolutionaryact.com, but the app, once you've got that little translation, also, like you said, connects you with a handful of different articles you can read if you choose to go deeper. And I love giving people the choice of just get a little snippet, a little snack-sized piece of wisdom to keep you motivated that day on the app. And there's a revolutionary act of the day that's the default one that comes up. Or you can shake it or browse and go through 101. But if you want to go deeper and say, okay, how do I do that? Giving people that deeper information, mostly articles from the magazine, is a way of encouraging people to educate themselves and find ways that they can experiment more successfully in putting these 101 ways into action. So I still use the app all the time, and I find it really fun, and kids love it. Something that we're increasingly wanting to share through educational institutions. And I'm so glad that you like it. You are one of the many people we consider to be healthy revolutionaries who are part of the community, who are making it easier to do these 101 things.
Well, thanks. And I felt like, you know, it also, you could kind of interpret it how you wanted. So the one that came up for me today, which I thought was pretty, you know, profound or useful for the situation that I'm going through, is love what you've got. And so, you know, it says treat your body with respect and appreciation. Focus on what you can do and not what it can't. Find something to celebrate and not something to criticize. So I really just turned that around and wasn't, you know, I'm not really focused on my body per se right now. I'm more focused on, you know, the grief and losing Bella. And I was really thinking about, you know, focus on what I have or what we had together versus that, yes, you know, versus on, you know, what I don't have right now. You know, I'm appreciating all the thousands of people that have, you know, posted or, you know, said something on Facebook that don't even know me or know Bella, the people, you know, around that have sent flowers and cards and the friends and people who have just texted and checked in on me, you know, every day and left their phones on at night in case I was panicking in the middle of the night. And, you know, just really appreciating, you know, all, not only what I had with Bella, but, you know, what I have with all the love and support of all the people around me. And then finding something to celebrate rather than criticize, you know, finding something to celebrate. You know, I have this sort of altar up of Bella and I have a picture of her as a puppy. And I'm really just, rather than focusing on the last several days of, you know, how that went down, but really celebrating her life and all the just wonderful times that we had together. So I found, you know, this to be just a really profound and helpful tool today, really having nothing to do. Oh, I mean, you know, that does have to do with health, right? I mean, that's my spiritual and emotional health, which, as we've already mentioned, most of us don't call health, but really is, you know, the foundations of our health, but really didn't have anything to do, you know, with, I'm not focused on body image, you know, today, right now in this moment. And I could even utilize this app and felt that I was able to turn around into something really helpful and supportive for me today. So probably something in there for everybody.
That's great. That's fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing that. That's a very, that's wonderfully satisfying to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, why don't you tell us about what's next for you? You're writing a book, and what's that about?
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. I've been planning on writing a book for the past 5 years, and it's just, you know, life is very busy. And the magazine in particular has been such an incredibly rich and very demanding project. And it also had spinoffs into lots of other things. We created a TV pilot. I did a radio show for a while. There are always, you know, new digital initiatives that we were working on. And I just never could find space for it. So I recently made a huge shift. Initially, I went to Huffington Post and served as the executive editor of Healthy Living there very briefly. But it was the exit ramp that I think I needed to get out of the day-to-day of managing the magazine. So now I'm serving as the chair for the board of directors for Experience Life and helping with strategy and high level thinking and doing things like this, which is so much fun for me to talk about it and share the message of it. But now that I've stepped away from the day-to-day operations of that, and I've stepped away from the crazy world of like, you know, Huffington Post is an amazing place, but incredibly demanding environment in terms of daily schedules. The pace of life in New York City was so nuts that for me, for the first time in my life, I actually feel like I've got space to write a book. And the book I really want to do is about the art of being healthy in an unhealthy world. A lot of what inspired the original feature, Being Healthy as a Revolutionary Act, there's a lot more that I want to say about that and a lot of counsel that I want to offer people on how to make that journey happen, how to really face the challenges that we confront when we choose to be healthy in the context of a society that often doesn't support healthy choices and, in fact, may actively interfere with your attempts to be healthier. And so it's a combination, a little bit of my own story and how I know what I know and discovered what I've come to believe to be true. But it's also a book that's really packed with what I think are the most powerful ways to be successful in the face of pretty significant challenges and how to do it with some fun and an empowerment and a feeling of hope rather than, again, that sense of should, like, ugh, I gotta do this. And it's really demotivating because my experience has been that it's been fun. When I started doing it the way that I think really does work, it's incredibly exciting and rewarding. And almost every day feels better than the last. And it's just so much better than, you know, the alternative of that spiraling downward and feeling more and more dependent on either, you know, prescription drugs or interventions from the medical system, or just feeling like, wow, this is where my life starts going downhill and it's going to get harder from here. I'm 46 now, and I feel that I'm healthier now than I was in my late 20s and early 30s. And I think I want more people to be able to experience that. So the book will be about empowering people to get on that path instead.
Well, I can certainly say after having met you that I never would guess that you were 46. You look amazing. So you definitely are who is practicing what they're preaching, and it's absolutely showing. And I, you know, personally look really forward to having the book come out and just seeing what, you know, else amazing you do with your life, because you've done so many amazing things so far. And you know, really, you know, it's been such a pleasure to have you. I remember hearing about a Revolutionary Act several years ago and, you know, signing up or, you know, for the newsletter and whatnot, and then having a chance to meet you several months ago in New York and now being here. It's just been a, you know, real honor and pleasure to have you.
Thank you so much. It's really a great honor and pleasure to meet you too. And I really hope more people discover the kind of medicine and health support that you practice. And I really hope you consider continuing your work in writing and podcasting and sharing everything that you know from your own experience, because it is life-changing for people. And what's coolest of all, you know, the number 98 of the 101 ways is make it a party. And it's really about, like, let's have so much fun doing this that everybody around us wants to do it too, you know? And I think that that for me is always the mark of a great health advocate, is someone who is healthy and happy. And then, you know, you believe, like, hey, look, this person's doing this successfully. I kind of, whatever she, you know, is in Harry Met Sally, I think, you know, she's like, I'll have whatever she's having.
Right.
And I feel that way about you too, Amy. So thanks for modeling it so beautifully.
Well, thanks.
And thanks so much for having me on your show, on your podcast show.
Absolutely. So let's tell people how they can. So for the magazine, it's experiencelife.com, and they can, what do you call it? Get a delivery, or you can get it at like Barnes and Noble.
You can subscribe.
subscribe.
Yeah, it's available on newsstands at Barnes and Noble and at many Whole Foods. I don't think all of them, although I would love it if people would go to their local Whole Foods and ask for them to carry it if they don't see it on the newsstand. We have a really limited newsstand presence for reasons that I will not get into, but have more to do with the magazine industry than anything. But we are very widely available by subscription, and you can subscribe at our website. For people who don't necessarily want to subscribe to the print edition, we also have a digital edition. We have a free e-newsletter that's available weekly or monthly that gives you headlines. It's a great way to get a kind of a taste test about what's in the magazine. And our website at experiencelife.com, we feature a lot of content, both that's in the magazine and a lot that's not, you know, videos and podcasts and other kinds of neat, groovy content treats. And then at revolutionaryact.com, people can find access to the 101 Revolutionary Ways to Be Healthy, both that infographic that's interactive and links to get you to the app itself, which is now available for almost every device, I think, from iPhones to Kindles to Androids and Nooks. And so those are all really easy ways to discover it. And of course, then on social media, people can follow Experience Life or RevAct on Twitter and at Facebook. And they can find me too. At Twitter, my handle is P. Gerasimo, which is my first initial, my last name. And so P. G. E. R. A. S. I. M. O. On Facebook, I think I'm Pilar-Gerasimo is my professional page, my public page. And just generally around in communities where you can find people like Dr. Amy Myers. You will find me too. So we love to connecting with people across all of those platforms and Pinterest and a bunch of other things. But increasingly, it's like, man, you can find this stuff almost anywhere now.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The magazine itself, I love for people to check out only because I don't think that there's another magazine like it available on the newsstand today. And I increasingly am convinced that it is one of the best health and fitness magazines available. You mentioned earlier when we started talking, Amy, about, you know, how it's sort of out there and people, you know, it's sort of, to me at least, it's surprising how many people have discovered it. I was particularly delighted to find out that Queen Rania of Jordan is a fan of the magazine, which I don't know how she found this magazine in Jordan, but she did.
Wow.
And I take her belief in it to be very flattering indeed, because she's an amazing health advocate. So
yeah,
wherever you are, you probably can find the magazine and more, and for sure online.
And I mean, there is so much information just on the website as well, on theexperiencelife.com. So definitely recommend everybody check that out. And if it, you know, speaks to you, go ahead and, you know, subscribe to the magazine. Well, Pilar, this was, as I mentioned before, an absolute, you know, joy. And I appreciate you joining us today. And, you know, thanks so much for being part of the tribe and helping to change the world.
Amen. Well, thank you so much. And thanks for having me.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
To stay in touch with Dr. Myers, you can sign up for her newsletter on her website at dramymyers.com or connect with her on Facebook or Twitter at amymyersmd.